friends, and welcome back to the next episode of I'm Like Anime, a weekly anime talk show where we talk about some anime. My name's George, and with me is Tony.
Hi, I am Tony.
Ah, still Tony, I see.
No, I'm thinking about changing my name.
Antonio.
Banderas.
Oh, wow. Go for it.
Going the whole hog.
Max sex appeal there. In his prime, anyway.
That's right. I'm nearly as hairy as he is.
Well, this is, we're back with episode 21. We got week 7. So they're all episode 7s except for one. Mm-hmm. So we're just plugging along here. If you've been following along, we appreciate it. And this is an often anticipated episode, I think. We got some heavy hitters in this one.
Yeah, I thought there were 2 6s, but yeah, there's just one episode 6.
Hmm.
I guess that one got started a little later.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. What do we got first, Tony?
The first episode 7 we have is Odd Taxi, or Odd Taxi.
Or as one word, Odd Taxi.
Well, I said the one word first, Odd Taxi. Anyway, yeah, so Odd Taxi has been pretty interesting lately. It's been pretty interesting the whole time, actually. Liking this show quite
highly,
a lot.
Highly consistent.
It's, yeah. It's well-written, well-structured. Yeah, so much good things. Yeah, I don't know. I guess at the beginning, we find out that Otokawa's home was shot, like, through a window into the wall of his house.
Yeah, seemingly like a message was left.
Yes.
And I kind of liked how they introduced that, because he walks, kind of unlocks his door, and he starts to walk in, and it shows this shot of kind of his hallway, and the sunlight's peering through, and you kind of see these little crystals on the floor, like kind of just illuminated, and it's like, oh, what's going on here? Like fairy dust, or I mean, but it shows it very briefly until we see the gunshot through the window, and then through the closet door, where there's something going on with that closet too. I guess we can get to that, but
yeah, well, I mean, the closet's been a thing that's been hinted at since the first episode, I think, maybe the second.
Yeah. Well, I think the first, maybe, yeah, you're right, maybe the second too, but only that one time. I mean, it's been referred to that Otokawa might be harboring this missing high schooler.
Yes.
But there was just that one scene early on when he is like talking to the closet.
Yeah.
But then this episode kind of, seems to confirm that there's someone in that closet.
Seems to, although at times seems to confirm that there's no one in the closet as well, but that's later in the episode.
That's true.
So Odo goes to the nearby police station, police box, whatever, and little Diamond is there, the younger of the twin police brother guys.
Yeah, he wears glasses, and he's a little slower, I suppose, or just, I don't know. He's not as like conniving or intelligent as his brother, it seems.
It seems, yes. He reports the crime to Little Diamond and has him come over to the crime scene to see it, and then basically says that he doesn't want it reported, but he just wanted to have a talk with him about how his big brother is basically a criminal, and there's this whole conspiracy thing going on, and he sort of lays it out and maps it out and explains it to him. And
he draws it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he sort of wants his help and his cooperation, in taking down Dobu and Dobu's boss, whoever that may be. We don't know for sure yet.
And he puts forth this, so Dobu has this boss he's working for, but then there's another character, Yano, who Otokawa claims is sort of Dobu's rival, but they're working for the same person.
Right.
But they're kind of competing with each other for... Well,
Dobu told him that, like...
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In the conversation after Dobu holds him hostage with the gun. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember him saying it outright, but maybe he did.
I could swear that he did.
Well, I remember it came up because Yano is the Mystery Kiss manager, the pop idol group. And he's the one that, you know, wanted.
Wait. No, I thought the, hold on. Who's the rapping hedgehog guy then?
I don't know. That's a new character.
I thought that was his rival.
No, I think, well, cause
I've seen him before as well, but.
Well, I specifically looked it up cause he writes on the paper that, Otakawa draws for the Little Daimon brother to illustrate everything. Yeah, it's clearly Dobu and Yano working for this boss, and Yano is this mystery kiss manager.
Oh, okay.
This other character I think has been introduced till this. I think this is his introduction.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know, this show has thrown so many things at us.
I think we've seen
like a little bit of him.
A little bit before, yeah.
Okay. Definitely not like rapping and stuff.
No, I don't think so. And not a lot of information about him, just that he exists within the world. Or maybe he's in the opening credits, maybe.
Yeah. He looks somewhat familiar, so you might be onto something there. We totally overlooked the eraser in the first episode
still hasn't come back yet. But
yeah, but and that's why this show is so great.
It's gonna.
I love it. But anyway, so Yano, I'm positive because I looked it up. He is the mystery kiss manager.
All right.
And so Dobu was the one that he was trying to get this information out of Odo, who was trying to, he was like, somebody was trying to get your footage of your cab, your SD card or whatever. And that's who it was.
Yeah.
God, I was going somewhere with that. We got so sidetracked. But it's interesting to me because I also thought back to, I mean, there's more stuff in this episode we got to get to, but it's interesting to me that if that's true, that he is also working for the same boss as Dobu is, because there was the one mystery kiss singer, one of the backup singers, not the Calico Cat, but the other one, seemed to plant her phone in the cab, in that a couple episodes ago, which means that, I mean, if that's true, then as a surveillance thing, I'm assuming that they heard the conversation between Dobu and Odo that took place later. So I was taking this into consideration. I was trying to connect some dots here.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that Yano, because he shows up in this episode later as well. I guess we should continue on with that.
there's so much.
They crammed a lot into this, and it was great too. It wasn't too much.
Yeah. Anyway, so one of Otokawa's demands in working with Dobu was that he forgive Shirakawa's debt and sort of cut her loose, which he does. And so now it seems that she's going to return to working at the Goriki Clinic.
For free.
Goriki, we're assuming that's his name, is like, yeah, whatever. We have to cure Otokawa of whatever it is he needs to be cured of, which they probably talked about before. I don't know.
Because there was that scene in the first episode where, he's meeting with Goriki and they're talking about his health and stuff, but they don't really delve into it too much. They show like a CT scan. And so like seemingly there's something, wrong with his, mental faculties. Something going awry there. But which is, it's another interesting layer. And I don't know if we, so that's the kind of another thread here, but I don't know if we, capped off the thread with the Little Daimon brother, cause Odo kind of ends that whole conversation proposing to him a deal, like, you don't believe me that your brother is up to no good,
right.
But just hear me out. I'm going to find you proof. And he's basically saying that like Odo will, he's like saying he'll go to jail just to bring this to light. And so I was kind of like, okay, well,
for justice.
Yeah. And the Little Daimon brother, seems to be kind of his thing. He's a little slow, a little dim-witted, but he's very, very concerned with justice and doing, bringing evil to it. Mm-hmm. And they also showed a little backstory with them.
With the Daimon brothers.
Yeah. Their parents, met an untimely end by some evildoers. So.
Evildoers. I sort of hinted at that, but yeah, we didn't really, other than Odo laying out the plan, I guess we didn't talk about Little Daimon's reaction to that. So
yeah, and it comes up a little later too, just a brief interaction, but
yeah. And then Dobu has cut Shirakawa loose. Kakihana is dodging his creditors. That's the next thing we see, I believe.
Yeah.
He's dodging the loan sharks or the subordinates of the loan shark that he borrowed the money from to impress the idol girl. And that's pretty much all that scene encompasses, right?
Yeah.
And then he eventually, after he dodges them, he goes to meet up with Idol Girl at some strange back alley warehouse location, which, you know, seems like a weird place to meet someone, but whatever.
Ichimura is her name. I have it written here.
Oh, okay.
Ichimura. Yeah, so she's like, it's like in an alley and she's like in the shadows and he's like, where are you? And she's like, over here. And then, yeah, they come up on him and apprehend him.
Yeah, so the idol manager, who's
Yano.
Yano. Yeah, basically clubs him over the head and drags him off. And yeah, it seems like he's sort of using the idol girls to set sort of a honey trap or whatever.
Yeah.
And she calls it a badger trap, I think is what she says.
Oh, really?
And I was like, I haven't heard that term before. So I sort of looked it up. And there's a thing known as a badger game, which is, I guess, similar. It's usually you trick someone into a compromising position. So you have like a girl that goes and sort of flirts with a married man and then, you know, takes him somewhere and they're about to hook up. And then, you know, some guy, her accomplice, bursts in through the door and is like, her husband, you know, says he's her husband or whatever, and then says, you know, I'm going to tell your wife unless you pay me, you know, $5,000 every month or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like that's what a badger game is, I guess. That seems to be what they're referring to. But I think honey trap is the term I would use.
Can we meet in the middle and just call it a honey badger?
Honey badger. Honey badger don't give a fuck.
That's funny. I didn't know about the badger.
Yeah, I had to, I mean...
Badger trap or...
Wikipedia, badger game.
Badger game.
Badger game on Wikipedia. Interesting. Yeah, yeah, if you want to read more about that. But yeah, I think she said badger trap. She might have said badger game, but she's basically saying, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I don't want to trick these rich guys into, you know, coming to these locations so that you can, like, kidnap them and extort money from them.
Yeah, which is funny because... So I guess I had sort of combined all these things. I was like, oh shoot, are the loan sharks, you know, connected with like the boss who Yano's working for, and it's all like this end game. But now you have me thinking that maybe not. Maybe the loan sharks are a separate thing, and they think this guy's rich, and they're trying to extort him, even though he's really not.
I think so.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I kind of lumped everything together. I was like,
I was when it first happened, because I didn't realize Yano was who you have discovered or said that he is. I thought the same thing at first, that maybe he was working for the loan sharks as well. But then when she said the badger trap thing, badger game thing.
Yeah. That I missed that. Yeah.
Then I was like, I immediately thought, you know, honey trap, as you know, that's what she meant. And I was like, oh, okay. So he's just doing this to extort money from them and stuff. But I still didn't realize that he was the other bad guy. I thought it was just like a separate thing, so I don't know, I might need to rewatch this episode with more information than I have now.
I feel like even when this season ends, I don't know if it's a contained story within one season, but I feel like either way I'm gonna have to, but also really enjoy going back and rewatching it,
because
there's so many little just hints and different elements going
on. This little, you know, Chekhov's eraser.
Yeah. You know? add an infinitum.
Right. Exactly.
Which is great. Like it's so thoughtful.
Oh, I have another Chekhov reference later in this episode, but not for this show, for a different show. But anyway. So yeah, Badger game.
Dobu and Oda or Odo.
Odo.
Go to I'm really into One Piece, and Oda is the author there, so I don't know if that's why I keep doing that.
Odokawa.
Yes, Odokawa. So Odokawa and Dobu...
go to Shibuya.
Yes, which it's Halloween, and so there's all these people wearing masks, and Odo had just had his life threatened by a guy wearing a mask with a gun, who we presume is...
Tanaka?
Tanaka, yes. Oh. And so that's another fun element, which I like, which has definitely been used before. But, you know, the whole thing of like, we're trying to, you know, there's some guy that's trying to kill you wearing a mask. and we're surrounded by people in costume. So here we go.
Yeah. But I mean, Dobu said that this was his plan, is I'm going to get one of those masks and I'm going to wear it on Halloween, and he'll be the only other one wearing the mask. And
Which is great logic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they inevitably find someone who is wearing that mask. I guess actually before that, as Odo is making his way to Dobu, he runs into someone who kind of bumps into him on a skate. You know, this guy's on a skateboard,
the
scooter.
The hedgehog. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's when we're introduced, to this this hedgehog.
You think hedgehog or porcupine? I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, it could go either way. Mm. He's cool, though. I like him.
I think of porcupines as more relaxed and chill.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason. I don't know why. Hedgehogs are pretty chill, though, too. So I don't know why.
When you got the whole hedgehog's dilemma, too, where, like, if you've heard that before, but it's, like, it's used in, like... it's referenced in Evangelion, actually, but it's like a social, you know, term of someone who can't get close to others without, you know, hurting them, you know. And so it's like, you know, hedgehogs try to, you know, gain warmth by cuddling together, and they just prick each other and cause each other pain.
I think I may actually remember that reference from the episodes of Evangelion that I watched.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I think it was in there somewhere.
So if he is a hedgehog, I'm wondering if that, since their animal type seemed to play some part of their
yeah, but I mean the porcupine's the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. Really, but they're, I don't know. Yeah,
could go either way.
That's true.
I'm thinking hedgehog though, and it seemed like you were on board for hedgehog as well. So
yeah,
let's just go with hedgehog.
I like that. And he as much as we've seen, he exclusively communicates in verse.
Yes, which is very annoying.
It was annoying, but I liked it. I liked that he committed to it, and that I found it funny that people let him finish. Like, where is this going? Wow, he keeps rhyming.
Yeah, it was sort of amusing at first in the conversation with Odo.
Yeah.
Where Odo's just like responding to his very lengthy and drawn out raps, which include a number of tangents which aren't related to the central subject but are put there because they rhyme.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was sort of amusing at first. And then it got annoying after it went on for a while for me.
I imagine he's supposed to be an antagonistic fellow. So it's like,
yeah. I would imagine he annoys everyone he meets.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know,
and he seems like
probably supposed to annoy us.
He definitely as we learn later, but yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that. So that happens, and then they Odo and Dobu meet in a diner.
Yeah.
And then they start to hit the streets and look for this masked character.
Go looking
character.
For this masked Tanaka,
yeah.
We assume. And they find someone that fits the bill, chase him down, and Dobu's like, "Give me my gun! Where's my gun?" And then he finds a gun, but it turns out to be a fake gun. He's like, "Where's the real gun?" And then he like starts beating the crap out of the kid,
quite brutally too.
Like, oh yeah,
it even like he just kind of ruffles him up, but then it goes off screen, and it's pretty.
Yeah, Dobu's not like a funny fun time gangster like we got in Tokyo Revengers.
That's right.
He's like an actual gangster.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess Mikey, and it doesn't matter. We don't need to talk about that anymore.
That's in the past.
We're done with that show. I don't need to reference it ever again. Anyway, yeah. So Dobu's beating the crap out of this kid. Odo looks over and sees our hippo boy recording a video over a wall. Or we assume it's the hippo boy. He's wearing a mask.
Oh, look, yeah, it's got to be him.
But it's very clearly him. And Odo knows it's him. And they had had this whole conversation earlier that Odo, once he has seen someone...
Mm.
Can recognize them in essentially any situation.
Yeah.
But he's never actually seen Tanaka,
once
which is why he
face.
Didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then they go chasing after Hippo-chan, and the episode ends, right?
Not exactly. As I recall, I think the last scene is with Kakihana and the...
we get back to Kakihana.
Yeah, and the rapping hedgehog approaches him, and he's like taken to an alley, and I don't know. He has this, you know, rapping monologue about I don't know, paying the piper, essentially, as I recall.
I may have blocked that out.
Maybe that I remember that's how the episode ended. It was like, oh snap, like Akihan is gonna get it, which is like, it's so, I think it was done well, but it's just like such, it's so hard to watch because Kakehana had, I don't know, I guess he had good intentions, but like he just went about it the entirely wrong way. And like, he deserves everything that comes to him at this point. And it's going to be hard to watch.
I don't know that he deserves it, but.
Perhaps not. I mean.
He maybe earned it, but I wouldn't say deserves it.
Perhaps. I mean, he was completely living a lie to, or fabricating a lie.
Yeah.
To woo a girl, but she was playing him the whole time.
Right.
And so now, if we're correct in the sense that the loan sharks are separate from this, I guess you're right in that sense. Like he doesn't deserve that, but he deserves what the loan sharks, you know, he deserves that comeuppance. But
yeah.
But this other, if this is different, if this is truly different, which it kind of seems like it is now that we talk about it, but if it truly is, then yeah, he doesn't really deserve this. But if they are separate, then dang, like he's going to have to, I don't know if he's going to survive all of that.
Yeah. And you feel bad for him. He's a likable character. He's Odo's best friend. So we have that we've absorbed that friendship through Odo being our sort of eyes into this universe, our main character, our protagonist.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have, he's our friend and we like him. And it sucks to see him in this bad place that he's in now.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Yeah.
So, well, I imagine that'll be picked up next week, and I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I'm also going to be, you know, biting my nails, seeing what happens to him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we are just leaving that on a sort of depressing note. Okay.
Well, hey, that's where we're at.
From one depressing note to another, how's Megalobox going?
It's a very entertaining depression, but but yes, Megalobox. I love this show. I mean, I said it before, but it's funny, these two are back to back on one episode, but my two favorite shows this season. And I don't, a lot, this is a packed episode.
Oh yeah.
A lot happened. I wrote down specifically, there's a reintroduction of three key characters that are reappearing from the first season that I haven't really talked about much.
Huh.
And then there's a brand new introduction of three new key characters in this episode. So I can definitely dig into it, but then I also had some reservations because you were...
So we're going for like an ensemble thing like My Hero, or... No, I'm just joking.
No, it's different. It's different.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, compared to My Hero, like this season anyway, like this is using, you know, matches and you know, battles, whatever you want to call them, to such great effect to drive the plot, you know, and drive the character arcs
and tell a story.
Yeah, and it's great. Like I like the first season, like I've talked about before, is all in service of this Megalobox tournament, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you imagine like you're going through all these different fights, these matches, and like okay, I can expect what's going to happen. But even then, there's an emotional arc to it. It's not profoundly deep or anything, but they pull it off and it's satisfying. But with this one, they've kind of inverted the whole thing, and it's just really entertaining. That being said, I don't know. Like, I don't know how far deep I want to delve into what happened in this episode. If you plan on watching any of it, I don't want to.
I considered it again this week. Actually last night, in fact, I had finished watching everything I needed to watch. And I had a few hours. And I thought about just starting at the first episode of this season, and I was like, I really should finish the last season first. And then I didn't feel like doing that. So I'm guessing that's probably how it's going to go for the rest of this season, is I'm not going to feel like it. So I'm watching this show vicariously through you. So please spoil everything.
Okay. That's all I needed. I feel similarly with Thunderbolt Fantasy. I've been needing to rewatch that.
Just and don't feel like it.
Yeah, just yeah. Like I'm not, I want to inevitably, but yeah, just not at this moment. Okay, so in the first season of Megalobox, the Megalobox tournament is called Megalonia, and it's a worldwide tournament that any legal citizen can enter, which is kind of cool. It's open to everyone. And in that season, it is
not everyone, but
but everyone in quotes, right?
Yeah.
And so that's that creates the whole dynamic of our main character Joe. Well, that's not even his name, but he's given that name eventually.
He's not a card carrying citizen.
He's not. He's off the grid. He's just kind of a nobody, lone wolf. And so, but beyond that, the sort of antagonists of the show are a couple of characters, but one of them, her name is Shirato Yukiko, and she is sort of the head of this corporation called Shirato, which creates the gears that they wear to do the boxing. And this gear technology has a lot of uses and stuff. But during the first season, that's really the main like push of the company. And so they're hosting this Megalonia tournament as sort of a publicity thing. And she has a sort of understudy slash romantic interest. Like they never show them involved, but it's this guy named Yuri. I'm sorry. Her name's Yukiko. His name's Yuri.
I think I kind of remember both of them. They must have been introduced early enough that I saw that.
Yes, there's. I think it's in the first episode where Joe is doing some night driving on his motorcycle, and Yukiko is like talking to Yuri, and then like she is leaving, and like she accidentally like hits him, and like he crashes, and like you know, biffs it, and he's like okay, we have some scrapes or whatever, and then. And she's trying to like make it up to him, like, are you okay? And he's just kind of a dick about it. And then Yuri's still there. And so they kind of like meet, you know, their eyes meet and they kind of have like a moment.
I remember there being some conflict between Yuri and Joe.
Yes. Yeah.
A few episodes later even, I think. Right.
So I won't spoil like, you know, how the first season ends, but inevitably Yuri is the, you know, the best fighter that Megalobox has, and that's
makes sense. That's pretty much set up from the beginning. So
yeah, and that's why this Yukiko girl is like sort of, you know, she's championing him to represent the Shirato Corporation and the gears they make. And so this all escalates. I don't want to get too into it because it's really good. It's a good climax of the show. But inevitably, Joe and this guy Yuri fight. Of course, you can imagine that.
Yep.
So she comes back in this episode, but the reason she's reintroduced is because there's another character we're learning of who's sort of a, I don't know, he's like a Steve Jobs type or like a Elon Musk type or something, but he's a head of this other corporation.
He's a competitor.
Well, he's actually working in tandem with the Shirato Corporation.
Oh, okay.
And his name is Ryugo Sakama. And he has this corporation called Roscoe. And so Roscoe is kind of, I don't know if they're the ones putting on this new Megalonia tournament, but Shirato is kind of taking a step back. Mm. But Roscoe is using the gears in a medical context. And there's a, and this is what I love about this, because like in the first season, it's Joe versus Yuri. Like it's all leading up to that, right? Mm. But in this one, it's about a lot of different things. That's not really the focus. But we learn in this episode that it's Yuri's now in a wheelchair, which is the aftermath of his match with Joe. And he is training this other guy, Lou, who's a, you know, up and comer, and he's been, you know, won a lot of battles. And he's going against this other guy who used to fight like years ago and then became a cop. And then he was like sort of a local hero. But then when he was trying to save a child or something, a stray bullet hit his spine. He became paralyzed. And so they're now using these gears, this Roscoe Corporation, using these gears to, you know, reanimate him, you know, to, and so it's, you know, they go into like, you know, a little bit of the science of it. It's like, all right, whatever. These gears are highly advanced. I get it. Yada, yada.
They're not just for punching each other.
That's right. That's right. And so, yeah, so those are those characters, and it kind of just sets up this whole match that's going to happen. But in this episode, I've talked about the orphans that, that were kind of became part of the family of Joe and the coach, and Sachio is the main one. But there's a few others. One of them is named Santa. I don't know, silly name, Western. But he's become sort of a journalist of sorts, and so he's writing a lot about Megalobox stuff, and so he is talking to this Lou guy who's going to be the next competitor, and he lets him know that Joe has returned. And they had fought previously when the coach was sick. I think I told you before that Joe like stopped visiting the coach in the hospital and was like, I'm going to fight this Megalobox tournament, even though Joe was in rough shape. And he got his ass handed to him by this Liu guy.
Oh, okay.
But, and this is what, this is another thing I like that this, this episode introduced. This Liu guy, you know, he's being trained by Yuri. And so he beat Joe kind of easily, but he wasn't at his peak. And so he kind of holds on to this grudge that like he never beat the Joe that Yuri faced. He seeks Joe out in this episode, and he confronts him about, like, he offers him a proposition to pay him to spar with him. And he's essentially like, you owe me because, you know, you gave me a shoddy match, you know, in your worst state. It's like, okay, I owe you for that. But he's like, teach me what you've learned on the road. You left here and have been, you know, just still fighting. And so kind of teach me. And so, Joe kind of, you know, not begrudgingly, but he, some reticence there, like, agrees to do that. And, it's so much happened in this episode. It's hard to just like sum it up. But that's essentially most of it. And they still continue as kind of a B plot, the relationship of Joe and the kids, the orphans. Because once like the Santa kid, like kind of sets it up essentially, like plants the seed. And then they're like, once the match, you know, they're sparring and stuff, they're kind of hiding. Santa and another one of the kids are hiding and like, so they can film it. And he ends up writing an article on it, but, they get caught, you know, doing that and they run away. So all the other Sachio and all the other kids are, you know, informed of that. And he writes the, you know, Joe in like a positive light. And so he kind of gets some shit for that.
Yeah. Santa sounded like the one that was going to be on Joe's side.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but just, I felt like that was coming.
And so you could see that. And the episode ends with, Joe getting sort of VIP seats to the first the match of this these two characters, Liu and Mac is the other guy that fought years ago and now has all these nano gears in his body and he's fighting better than he ever has.
Was he in the first season or is this somewhere in between?
I don't remember him, but this episode ends like Joe has these VIP seats and he extended the invitation to Santa and one of the other kids who owns the restaurant, like a Chinese restaurant I brought up last time. And they both come. It's funny because Joe's like, they're like, oh, wow, they really, you know, splurged on these seats for us. And Joe was like, you guys didn't have to come, you know, like I didn't, you know, I wasn't forcing you. And the more portly kid who owns a Chinese restaurant was like, you know, like, oh, I just came because I wanted to. And then the other one was like, hey, if I can make a buck off you, I'm there. And so he, you know, it's kind of exposes himself. Then the episode ends as they're introducing these, like, you know, the two fighters. And Liu comes out. Or no, actually, they introduce Mac first. They haven't introduced Liu yet. Mac they introduce, and he's walking out. And as he's walking out, he, like, since, you know, they have, like, front row seats, he sees Joe, and he, like, locks eyes with him. And he sort of, like, makes a smile, makes a face. And then the episode ended. So it's like, oh, shoot, do they know each other?
So there's potentially some history there.
Yeah.
Definitely seems like, yeah. Huh.
And I don't remember him exactly, but I think if he was in the first season, it would have been like, oh, yeah, that guy. Because they showed a whole backstory of him and stuff. So I'm pretty sure he wasn't, but there's something there. I hope all that made sense.
Maybe they used to work together and throw fights when... Nomad was on the road.
Oh, that could be
something. I don't know.
Yeah, are they
just sort of spitballing?
Yeah, no, that could be. Or like back in the day, yeah, before he got the surgery and all that, maybe they had a run in. But yeah, I hope that all made sense. I don't know if
it all made sense to me.
Okay, good.
Hopefully, that means it made sense to everyone listening.
The only other new character, or not new, but reintroduction of a character I didn't mention is the Yukiko girl who's working with the guy that has the Roscoe Corporation. Her brother, was in the first season, and he's a Megalobox fighter as well. She and him are kind of at odds. They don't see eye to eye. And so there's a lot of, you know, there's some drama in the first season about that. Like, he fought Joe at one point and inevitably lost, but he makes an appearance in this, not so much fanfare, but he's there. And so it's, and that was seemed like a surprise to her, his sister. So I don't know what role he'll play, but,
yeah. So Joe didn't invite Sachiko to the fight or Sachio to the fight. Because he assumed he wouldn't come, or
I think so. Okay. Yeah, because it's like out of all of them, Sachio was the closest with Joe, and he's also the one that told him to scram.
Yeah,
which whatever, it was just a kid. But yeah, I think Joe just realizes that Sachio, the way he feels and how stubborn he is, and that he's not going to come around until he's ready. So Santa, the two kids he did invite were the ones that got caught, like, you know, videoing them when they were sparring. So I think that's probably why they were just like, all right, you know, it wasn't a big deal, like extending the olive branch, which I kind of like, because it's like he's kind of making it up to these guys who he does remember and is fond of. But, you know, Sachio is the one that ultimately, and I imagine that this season's going to end with them making up. But I have full confidence that they'll pull it off in a believable way.
Yeah, I mean, Joe has to win over probably all of the other kids before Sachio is going to come around, I would guess.
Yeah,
feels like that maybe.
And Sachio's doing underground fights too, and getting beaten horribly. Like, he's not, you know, he's incapable of throwing them because he can't even win them. So I don't know. I'm imagining that Joe, if they can make up, that he will, you know, be helping Sachio in some way, or
train Sachio or something.
So yeah, Megalobox, it's at a solid 8 for me, and I just love it. Odd Taxi's also on an 8. Both good shows.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't, yeah, like I said, I don't think I'm gonna catch up on it. I don't think I'm gonna start watching it, but yeah, sounds good. If you at home have time to go back and catch up, like maybe you watch the whole first season and you just haven't watched the second season. I don't know why that would be the case, but
I implore you if that is the case.
Yeah, if that were the case for me, it would be much easier. I would just start season 2, and I mean, 7 episodes in at this point. So
yeah, now, and I hear you. I wanted to give you that courtesy.
Yeah, I mean, with the 7, and then I think I got 5 into the first, which means another 7, meaning that I would be 14 episodes behind at this point. So
yeah, it's quite a bit.
Yeah,
you're already just watching a lot more.
You know, I got to stay ahead of you on the special challenge too, so I got a lot to watch.
Well, even if you watch this next season or something, I imagine a lot of this will, all these details will be you know, forgotten.
Oh yeah, I don't remember anything. What was your name again?
Sachio.
Oh right. Damn, Sachiko is what I was thinking, and I don't know.
And I'm not forgiving Joe.
I mean, Sachiko would be a girl's name, so I mean, clearly not you, because you're clearly not a girl.
Well, that hurts my feelings.
I knew it would. All right. So that's Megalobox, episode 7. Sounds great. If you're not watching it, you should be. I should be. I'm not.
We all should be.
I feel bad. I feel guilty for not watching it now.
Well, what show should I be watching, Tony?
That's interesting you should ask that, because I don't know.
I'm just trying to tee you up.
Probably not Hige Hero after being rejected, I shaved, and took in a high school runaway. This is not a show I would recommend to you, particularly George. I don't know. There are elements of it that you would like, but I think overall you would dislike this show.
I've been turned off a little bit by the I don't know what to call it, but rapey elements, or just sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that was just really just that one episode, and now, you know, just been completely forgiven, is just sort of part of the crew. I don't know.
Oh, it's, really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, we'll get to that. He comes up in this episode. It's you know, it's not super, I don't know. Yeah, Sayu basically just almost immediately forgives him, like, oh, that's just what he's like.
Hand wave.
Yep. So anyway, in this episode of Higehiro, after being rejected, I shaved and took in a high school runaway. At one of the very first scenes, Sayu's coworker points out a chauffeur-driven black sedan that's been parking in front of the store a lot lately, and no one ever gets out of it. No one ever comes in or anything. They just park there for a while, and then they leave, and then they park there for a while, and then they leave. And apparently Sayu hasn't noticed this, but this is this is Sayu's female coworker who she's, you know, friends with. So yeah, that would be Chekhov's sedan.
Oh,
so
there it is.
We'll get back to it later. Anyway, in Yoshida's life, which we skip to after the credits, Mishima, it's Yoshida's coworker who has a crush on him, the younger one, his kohai.
Okay.
She is jealous of the fact that Sayu is texting him all the time and that Goto is, I don't know, sort of comfortable with him. Like, they're not like super flirtatious or anything in the office. But like, I don't know. She's just jealous of both of the other girls in Yoshida's life. She sort of focuses on the fact that she doesn't have his contact info, his phone number or anything, or his line information, I guess, in Japan is what it would be. So she sort of focuses in on that as like, yeah, they can text him whenever they want, and I don't even have his info, so I can't. And anyway, so Mishima invites Goto-san out to lunch, basically so that she can sort of confront her about the Yoshida, Sayu, Goto situation going on with them. And yeah, basically Mishima is surprised that Goto isn't worth... I keep saying Goto. Goto-san. Mishima is surprised that Goto isn't worried about like the possibility that Yoshida could fall for Sayu. And Goto, again.
That's just your go-to.
I mean, it's spelled G-O-T-O-U.
Oh, yeah. Goto.
Goto. But in English, just the G-O-T-O is Goto, right? Anyway. My tongue will eventually cooperate with my brain. Anyway, so yeah, Mishima is surprised that Goto isn't worried about the possibility of them falling in love, and Goto, being an older, more experienced woman, basically just sort of laughs at Mishima's naivete, petty jealousy, and whatnot, saying, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be, regardless of what I do. Like, I could spend energy, you know, trying to separate them, but it's going to end up how it's going to end up, you know.
Yeah,
love was going to find a way if that's what's destined to be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for this girl. I mean, there's other guys, right? I mean,
yeah. Mishima is just very, I don't know, very focused in on Yoshida for some reason.
Infatuated.
But yeah, Mishima gets herself all worked up at this lunch and basically starts yelling and like saying, well, I couldn't do that. I couldn't just, you know, sit by and watch it happen if I thought that there was something that I could do to stop it. And Goto's like, calm the fuck down, girl.
You can murder.
You need to lower your voice. You need to sit down. You need to eat your parfait.
Those are words to live by.
She doesn't say any of those things, but that's the gist of it.
Were they eating parfaits?
I actually don't remember what they were eating, but probably.
I like it. I like it. That's all girls eat, right?
Yeah, I think so. Pretty sure. Anyway, yeah, it's going to work out. However, it's going to work out is Goto's philosophy. And Mishima sort of thinks she's surrendering. Anyway, so then after work, Mishima sort of follows Yoshida out and sort of says, hey, give me your contact info. And he's like, well, I mean, I could, I suppose, but I only text people that I need to actually talk to about things. I don't have anything to say to you, basically.
Wow.
Which comes off as a little bit cold from him, but he doesn't realize that she's into him at all.
Is this his MO in the show though? Like, does he, I mean, I know he got rejected by, I'm assuming Goto.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I guess it's like a love triangle thing happening where like he still is into her.
It's like a quadrangle or something. I don't even know. It's a very complex shape.
But like, since he got rejected, is he still showing affection for Goto, or is like he just not, is he just like a blank slate at this point?
No. So after getting rejected by Goto, he sort of was, and Mishima sort of maybe had a chance in there. But then after that, Goto invited him out to dinner and basically confessed that she was actually in love with him. And the only reason she rejected him is because she didn't feel like it was the right time for them to start dating or something. So they're both into each other. Like, okay. Goto and Yoshida are into each other. Mishima doesn't really know all of this, but she sort of does, because Goto came over to the house and met Sayu and stuff like that. And that's where Mishima's sort of jealousy reared its ugly head before, when she ran into Yoshida when he was on his way to the konbini.
So it's like she learned there was two girls that she has to, you know.
Yeah. She was worried. With. She was sort of worried about Sayu, but like at first she didn't seem like she was really worried about Sayu. She was just like, oh, okay. You know, it seems like sort of a normal relationship that's going on, normal, healthy relationship. It's not like he's in love with her, but she was a little bit worried. Like, I think she expressed a little bit of worry. But then, yeah, now that Goto is sort of back involved in the situation again, now she's seeing it as like there's two girls that she has to beat to win Yoshida.
But ever since Goto admitted that she does have feelings for him, I mean, they're still not together though, right? Like,
correct. Basically she said, you know, I don't feel like it's the right time. I didn't feel like it was the right time at the time. I don't feel like it's the right time now still.
But I feel I should tell you. Interesting. I mean, it's interesting.
It was basically that he was pestering her until she said.
Oh, okay.
Until she, you know, admitted that she actually liked him.
Okay. So even after he got rejected initially, he was still.
Well, he wasn't. It was at her. He wasn't pursuing her. He had given up. He was like, okay, got rejected, given up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she sort of became jealous of what she thought was going on with Mishima.
Okay.
Because she thought that Yoshida was maybe dating Mishima because he's, you know, been coming to work with his shirts pressed and looking cleaner and stuff like that, I guess. And so the assumption around the office is that he had gotten a girlfriend and he had sort of seen Mishima and Yoshida, or sorry, Goto had seen Mishima and Yoshida canoodling a little bit, you know, like being friendly enough that she assumed that that was a relationship. And then she got jealous of that relationship that she perceived and then invited Yoshida out to dinner basically sort of confronted him about the whole thing. And he said, no, there's nothing going on. And
okay.
then that went away. And then later, essentially the same thing happens. She becomes sort of jealous and invites him out to dinner. And that's when she ends up confessing, mostly because she's sort of pressing him about, like, who are you dating? Like, it's clear that you're dating someone.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not dating anyone. And why do you give a fuck? You rejected me. And she said, well, I give a fuck because I'm in love with you.
And your shirts are way too clean.
He's like, wait, what? If you're in love with me, why did you reject me? And anyway.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, God. Okay. Yeah. But then, so the reason he was looking cleaner with his shirts pressed is because of Sayu.
Sayu is doing the housework and stuff. Yeah.
You may continue.
All right.
Thank you.
Anyway, so yeah, Mishima, jealous, meets up after work and basically demands Yoshida's contact info from him. And he somewhat begrudgingly agrees, hands his phone to her.
Oh, really?
So that, you know, he's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, he's such a pushover.
I think actually at first she asks him if he can go to a movie and he says, oh no, I can't. Sayu's making a special dinner tonight. Look, I got a text that says special dinner. And that just annoys her more, I guess. Anyway, eventually after this whole thing where he sort of agrees and then she goes off on a tangent and essentially ends up confessing to him as well, saying that she's, you know, in love with him, and then immediately follows it up by saying, well, a little bit anyway. So she's one of those. Anyway, yeah, confesses that she's in love with him and says, you know, can I ask you out to a movie again sometime? And he's like, yeah, okay. He's very, very casual about it. But yeah, I don't think, I think he knows, I mean, obviously he knows that she's into him because she just confessed. I don't think he wants to break her heart or hurt her or anything like that.
He's too polite to say so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a complicated love quadrangle thing going on, like I said. But anyway, back to Sayu in the store and the black sedan.
Oh yes,
of Chekhov.
Hmm.
That
sedan's
so
gonna run someone over.
The sedan pulls up and someone gets out this time, and Sayu recognizes that person and then immediately like hides. And then she goes and hides in the back room. And
but they're in the store?
Yeah, yeah, in the store. Well, no, they're not in the store. They get out of the car, and she's in the store, and she sees them and then hides.
Okay.
And Mr. Former Attempted Rapist Guy, co-worker, is there. And yeah, and he basically covers for her and says, yeah, no, I don't know anyone by that name, you know, when the person comes in. And then she's in the back and she's talking to the other coworker who she's friends with. And she says, oh yeah, that's my brother. I guess he's been probably looking for me since I ran away. And, it appears that he's found me and I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to avoid him.
So this is a new character.
Life. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So her brother, who we haven't seen before, I guess has been looking for her and apparently has found her. And, yeah, she's going to continue trying to hide, but she's worried that she's probably going to be forced to go home to Hokkaido at some point in the near future.
Mm.
And, yeah, and that's basically it. So, you know,
okay.
little drama push there at the end, like, oh no, Sayu's going to have to go home. Mm. And then what's going to happen with all of these crazy relationships? And anyway, yeah, it's still like a 6 out of 10. I can't really go any higher than that. I'm not like super in love with it. Like the characters are all fine and the story is fine and it's fine, which is that's a 6. It's just fine.
Do you feel similarly? Because I was explaining in an episode this week about those Snow White notes, where it's like it's also a 6 out of 10 for me. But it's like I'm rooting for it. I show up every week and I want it to improve. But some other shows, I'm like waiting for them to just nosedive. Like, how do you feel about this one?
No, I like it. Like, there are feel-good moments in it that feel good. And, you know, things like that. Like, it, I don't know. It at times, it feels like it's trying to be overly dramatic. But that's never completely overbearing other than the one scene. that I mentioned, I think, 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
With the unnecessary violin music, just sort of pushing the drama. But no, it feels fairly authentic most of the time. And
I enjoy it.
And I don't expect it to ever go over a 6. I don't expect it to do anything more than really what it's doing now. It is at some point going to push the drama harder. And it's going to feel unnatural and I'm not going to like it, but I expect it. So I won't be surprised when that happens. I don't think it's ever going to be a great show, but I don't think it's ever going to be bad either. So,
okay. Yeah. You likely expect to finish it out.
Yeah. I think it's just going to cruise a 6 all the way through to the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's enjoyable. It's not, I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, what we would consider our top fives. And I think very quickly said this wouldn't make my top 5. It's probably my top 10, but
of the season.
Of this season. Yeah. Right.
Just to clarify.
Yes. That was the conversation. it's not making my top 5. It is probably making my top 10, which I think I'm watching like 25 shows now or something. Wait, no, it can't be that many.
It can't be.
No, it can't possibly be. We've got 5, 7, and 7.
15 is what I got on this sheet that I'm looking at.
15 is how many I'm watching? Yep. Oh, okay. So I'm watching 15 shows. So yeah, making it in my top 10 is probably not hard considering I dropped how many shows this week?
Yeah, we dropped 2 collectively.
We each dropped 2 shows. And and so, yeah, my top 15 just got a little shorter.
That's right.
There's only 3 shows that are not in my top 10.
I wonder
what those would be. That's a good question. That'll be fun to explore later.
Yes. Gloomy, the Naughty Grizzly.
Yeah, that's not good. you're right. That's not making my top 10. You are absolutely correct.
But I mean, on that note, I mean, it makes sense. It should, our list should get shorter as the season goes on and we're honing what is good and what we're not so much a fan of. So
yeah,
it's nice. It's nice to get a lighter load and to know what you really are excited about.
Speaking of shows that might not make my top 15.
I hear ya. It's a little show called Yakumo. Let's make a mug too. It's the little slice of life that could. No, I'm kidding. It's not that bad. We've talked about this before.
It's not bad.
It's like a 15-minute runtime, and it has like an after-school special with the voice actors going around the town that the show is taking inspiration from.
Yeah.
Which I kind of wrap that aspect up into the show, but it's like when you just look at the show, it's like, yeah, it's not that great. Like, I will say about this episode, I think the show consistently looks good. Like, it doesn't look amazing, but there's always like pretty visuals in the show that I enjoy. Like comparing it to Super Cub, which I like more. I like that show more overall, but it's kind of, and it was gorgeous from the beginning, but I feel like it's kind of, it's not as pretty as it was to me. I was noticing in this week's episode. No,
it's I think it's the same pretty. It's just maybe you've gotten used to it.
Could be. But like with this show, I'm like, with Let's Make a Mug, I'm like trying to find some positive.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
Not that I have a lot of negatives, but it does look good. But yeah, what did you think of?
Tournament arc.
Yeah.
Right, so Minami, that's her name, right? Our main girl?
Himeno.
That's her last name, probably. Oh, okay. Or her first name. That's her first name. Oh, Minami is her last name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just have Himeno, which she's referred to it. Yeah. So yeah, you're probably right. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, Himeno can't decide what to make for the contest. Oh, no. She tries to make some plates because it occurs to her that her dad said, like, we should get some more plates. So she's like, I'll make plates.
There you
go. But they end up looking like shit. So, you know, that didn't work out.
Let's give up on that. Oh, she turns them into coasters. That's what,
yeah.
What happens?
They look like shit coasters too, actually.
Well, they do. Yeah, they're very clumpy. Which makes sense. She's just started her pottery journey.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally fair, but yeah. You know. And then she decides to make a pillow out of ceramic because that makes sense.
Yeah, that one I was very confused on. Because there's like a scene where,
like, I sort of got her logic on it.
Yeah. And I guess they kind of tied it into an ancient thing, but
yeah, if there's a reason. In ancient China, they used to have ceramic pillows.
And there's a reason we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, they're terribly uncomfortable, I imagine.
Maybe they stay.
But I'll bet they are cool, you know, when you lay your head on it. It's not going to be like hot after sitting in the sun all day. Wait, ceramic gets hot.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Wait a second. None of this checks out.
Nope.
All right, so 6 out of 10. In the live action part, wait, did you have more to say about the...
No, I wrote kind of boring and it had like repetitive gags to me, like in the beginning where I don't even remember what they were, but there's like a repetitive gag of the one girl who's like loud and obnoxious being loud and obnoxious. And then the senpai character like pulling on her ears. That happened like 3 times this episode in a 15-minute episode.
Yeah.
So that's about it. It looks pretty and it's over quick. So I guess those are my pros.
Yeah. It's not a great show.
Yeah. But it's not entirely awful.
It's not a good show.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also gave this a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. It's fine. I would, you know, if there was something better, I might drop it. But right now,
Actually, I'm going to give it a
fine.
I think I'm going to give it a 5, actually.
No, it's too late. You already said 6.
Well, no, I hadn't actually rated it. I was looking up here and I hadn't done the 7th episode.
But oh, okay.
I gave last episode a 6. This one's a little less for me. I'm going to go a 5.
Yeah, last episode was a little more interesting with her going and, you know, seeing her mother's artwork and stuff. And now she's like just sort of thinking about like, oh, my mother did all these great things and I suck at making plates.
Yeah.
All right. So in the live action segment.
Yes.
The seiyus hand build some plates, do some hand building. It's a technique. And so instead of using the wheel, you make a base and then you stick a bunch of ropes, on it essentially, and then smooth them out so that they make like they call them plates, but they're bowls, right?
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, they're like plates with a lifted edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. They said they're making it for curry, which I would think a bowl, but it's like a plate with like a lifted edge. So it's essentially a bowl, but they're kind of cute.
But not like round bottom bowl. It's a flat bottom bowl.
Yeah. Sort of a hybrid, I suppose.
Yeah. So they make some and they all choose different shapes to make. There's one that makes a kitty cat, one that makes a heart.
The cat was my favorite.
One that makes an oval.
Yeah. And they have like little...
She's actually my favorite, but super boring choice.
Yeah. They have like little stamps and stuff, which is kind of cool. They put little, you know, little designs they stamp into the plates.
And I guess tune in next episode where we get to see how they glazed their plates.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe some other stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be something.
Are you still liking the live action portion better?
I guess. Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's
I think it's on par for me. Like
it's on par.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this week it would probably be on par overall.
They didn't do the thing where they, you know, talk about personal lives and childhoods and, you know, have like those
There wasn't much
personal
of that.
Moments or anything like that, other than like them choosing the shape of their plates. They sort of joke around a little bit, but not much there. Not much substance there.
I would like that, like a little more banter and just joking around. There was like a tiny bit of that, like in the beginning they had. Well, it's funny because I kept talking about how they hadn't changed clothes, but then last week they did change clothes. But then in the beginning of this week's episode, they were like, "Oh, we changed clothes," and they were wearing all these bright colors.
Oh yeah, and they were all wearing like sort of overalls that were dyed different colors.
Yeah,
and the colors were representative of the characters that they play in the show.
Yes,
okay, you caught that.
Yeah, which is cute, and they had a little. They had, you know, they kind of joked about that a little bit, but that was kind of it as far as
there wasn't a whole lot.
And they goofed off a little bit making the plates, but it's I kind of just view this, like both segments, as just fluff. Like it's nice fluff. It's not compelling or something I crave, but it's it generally looks decent and it's on my list of things to watch, so I watch it.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I told Tony this before we started, but this was a show that I was considering dropping, but then I was...
You've been considering it for weeks.
I have, but the most this week. And I think that's ultimately why I have to go with the 5.
I mean, you weren't crazy about the Stalking the Teacher episode. I think that's sort of where it all began, and you started... I mean, you weren't real high on it anyway, but you started sort of downward from there.
Yeah, like I gave that episode a 4.
Yeah.
And then last week's a 6, and now we're a 5, so...
Yeah, it's up and down then.
Yeah, it's fine.
Or you're bipolar. I don't know.
It's not like like other shows I have dropped are kind of painful to watch because they're poorly written or I just don't care.
Right.
And this show, like, I care like a little bit, like very little, but
just the minimum required amount, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, I'll tune in until next week. We'll see what happens.
And I think it's only here by the grace of the live action portion, because if you didn't have that to maybe, because you consider them sort of a block, a group. They go together.
Yeah.
You can't watch the one that you like without watching the other.
Yeah, it feels weird to watch just one.
Yeah. So yeah, the live action portion has saved this anime.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, not so much. I don't really care for the live action portions very much.
But you still watch it.
They're fine. I do still watch them. They are minimally amusing sometimes. The anime itself is just it's fine. It's just barely above mediocre. Anyway, that's probably enough.
Let's move
yammering on about
that. We talked about more of that. We talked so much about that, it was longer runtime than the episode itself. So.
Yeah, probably so. If we can get through this quick enough, we can get to Your Eternity faster.
That's right.
Which is not the show that I'm talking about right now. So I'm going to talk about The Saint's Magic Power is Omnipotent, episode 7. So in this episode, largely thus far, we've been seeing Sei, who we assume is the saint, the main girl we've been following around and everything. But there was another girl that was summoned at the beginning, and we haven't seen a whole lot of her. We've heard about her a couple times, mentioned a couple times. And I guess maybe we have seen her very briefly a couple times in the past six episodes.
This is the supposed other saint?
The other potential saint, I guess. Okay. And yeah, so this whole episode focuses on her. Her name is Aira, A-I-R-A. And it's basically a one episode that covers the same timeline as the previous six episodes, but mostly seen from her point of view or what's going on around her and stuff like that.
Okay.
So we sort of see her first interactions with Prince Kyle, who is the one who sort of decided that she was the saint because she was prettier, I guess, is okay. What he says in this episode. He thought the other girl looked more homely and like a laundry woman is what he says, I think.
How rude.
Yeah, he's talking about our say. Anyway, and yeah, so that's essentially the whole episode. As we see everything sort of from her perspective, we get into a little bit of the stuff with, I think last episode we were talking about Liz and Say having a conversation about how this girl is not really fitting in with the other girls because she's spending too much time around the boys, especially Liz's fiance, which is Prince Kyle.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we see a little bit more about that, but I mean, there's not a whole lot to this, but it feels good to just watch it and see it from her perspective. Like there's not a whole lot of Say in this. We see Say like twice, I think.
Mm.
But we've sort of been wondering about her for the last six episodes, like whatever happened to that other girl. And we get these little reports occasionally, and now we get to sort of see all of it. And,
okay.
And Prince Kyle has realized that she is probably not the saint at this point. Like he sort of says that flat out.
Mm.
But he would feel bad for her if he were to sort of admit that, and then she would just get pushed to the wayside, right? Mm. Like when she first arrives, she's like very upset about the fact that she's not going to be able to ever go back home. Mm. And he's like, oh, well, maybe we can figure out a way. And I don't know. So he, you know, gives her hope and everything, and then trains, and like she, so Say has had really like leaps and bounds of development in her magic ability. Right. And this girl also seems to have done pretty well too. She's not quite to the level of Say, being able to heal severed arms or anything like that. But her magical skill in the time that she has had to learn it is much more impressive than anyone else would have achieved in that time. So I guess there is that possibility that she is still a saint, and we just have two saints.
Okay.
We just have one that specializes in one thing and one that probably could have done more if she had gone some route other than sort of being taken by Prince Kyle, who.
So it's his fault.
Yeah. It kind of seems like it, to be honest with you. Like, and then the whole Liz fiasco and everything, that's all Prince Kyle's fault as well. Because he's trying to protect Aira from sort of everything, the outside world and everything like that, because he feels responsible. Yeah, I don't know. He feels responsible for having brought her to the world. And anyway, he's, like I was saying, he's decided that he's going to back her, and he's going to continue to pretend like he thinks that she is the saint.
Gotta double down.
Because he doesn't want to embarrass her or something like that. I don't know. The premise is maybe a little thin for me, or I don't get it completely. But
do you think maybe he? I mean, I saw one episode last week,
right?
And I've been listening to you tell me about it. But do you think maybe like along lines of what I was saying, like double down? It's like he already vouched for her, so for him to go back on it, like it's like I just got to commit to you being the saint.
No, but he says explicitly it's not for him. That it's for her. It's not that he's worried about his own embarrassment at having backed the wrong horse, basically. It's that he thinks that if he doesn't continue to fight to have her recognized as the saint, she'll be sort of, you know, cast aside. She won't be living in the palace anymore. She'll just be this girl that was summoned, unfortunately, and is now off living in a gutter somewhere or something, right?
Yeah.
So Yeah.
He's doing it for her livelihood to not, you know.
He would feel bad if she had been summoned to the world and then just cast aside, essentially, yeah. and okay. become like a secondhand.
So he's not heartless.
Second class citizen or something like that. Yeah, he's not, he seemed that way in everything we saw from Say's point of view. Like, he seemed kind of a jerk, you know? a self-righteous, inflated ego jerk. And he has all of those things as well. But he does also have a conscience, and he's not a completely bad guy.
Do you think there's any weight to Liz, his fiance, questioning or being jealous of his relationship with Ira or whatever her name is?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think he's in love with Ira. I don't think Ira is in love with him. It's just that he is so protective of her that he basically won't let anyone else be around her. Like, Liz tries to talk to her at some point, and he comes like rushing over, like, "What are you doing to her? What are you doing?" You know, like protecting Ira from his fiance. Huh. And she's like, "Oh, I was just talking to her and inviting her to a tea party or something." And he's like, "Oh, well, she won't be able to go. Come on, Ira, let's go."
It's like he doesn't even trust her, his own fiance.
Yeah, I think that's partly that he's worried that people are going to find out that she's not the saint, that she doesn't have these powers and stuff, and that's going to ruin his strategy to protect her. I don't know. His mind is very stupid and complicated.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's essentially what we got in this episode. I'm trying to think of other like little tidbits or anything that's going on. We didn't get any more of the, like I say, we barely saw Say, so we didn't see anything of the Ice Knight, Captain Hawks, who they have that budding romance going on.
Yeah.
Hopefully more in the future of that. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, it's still a 7 of 10. Like, this episode was pretty solid story-wise, despite being a complete departure. Sort of like in Odd Taxi, where we had that whole Tanaka episode, right?
Yeah, yeah. Kind of needed it.
It was sort of great, you know?
Yeah.
It was sort of a great breather and an interesting switch of perspective. I like this show a lot.
Cool.
Not as much as the next show.
Well, let's round out this episode. We got... I was going to sneeze.
Achoo.
To Your Eternity. Is the next show and the final show of this episode.
Yeah, I would say the title in Japanese, but I flubbed it when I was saying it earlier. Not in this show, but in a different episode, right?
Fumetsu no Anate.
Fulalabababa.
So you're reading the manga concurrently as we watch this show.
Yes, and sometimes I'm ahead on one, sometimes I'm ahead on the other. This week, I got a little bit ahead. Not ahead of this episode, but I read into this episode quite a bit
before
I watched the episode. So I knew everything that was coming. It's very true to the manga, in a lot of ways. There's like little bits that are missing with some, narration dialogue and stuff. There's definitely a lot more of that in the manga, but the show captures the manga really well, and the manga is really good, and the show is really good, and I love them both, and I can't decide which one I like more.
Well, I will say something to you that you love hearing. You were right about...
What was I right about?
Well, because you...
It doesn't matter. I was right.
Because you're reading and watching both. I didn't catch on or didn't... I think I saw it, but I just didn't catch on to it.
Oh, the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's the ending of last week's episode, right, where they essentially, Fushi is leaving the village, and and March has been killed. Mm-hmm. But they show Fushi as March getting some fruit, a pear, or something. You were confused if you had spoiled that or not.
I wasn't sure if it was in like the next episode or if I had gone too far ahead in the manga and if I had actually spoiled something from the episode. But yes, I did go back and rewatch the end of the episode, and it was there. And then I sent you a screenshot of the manga.
Yeah, which is cool to see. And also, like, I mean, manga can do things differently, but it's like just seeing that one page that you sent is so much more impactful than the brief because I went and rewatched the ending.
3.5 seconds.
Yeah,
right?
It's so brief, and they're doing it like in like that sort of like the credits are coming, like let's wrap this up, which is unfortunate. So I'm interested in the manga as well. I haven't. It's on Crunchyroll, I believe, right?
It is. Yep, Crunchyroll manga.
Which you get as part of a Crunchyroll subscription.
Yeah, if you subscribe to Crunchyroll, you get all the manga as well. I think you can read chapter one for free.
Okay.
It used to be that for the simulpubs, the last two or three chapters were also free. So if you were up to current, then you could keep reading. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I've been a subscriber for so long that I don't know.
Humble brag.
I mean, not that long, not like 10 years or anything, but you know.
I've been on enough, but yeah. So along those lines, in this episode, we start off with Fushi continuing his adventure.
He's just sort of wandering about at first.
Yeah, and the narrator kind of cues us in that like mostly he's out as the wolf, which, you know, is easier to get around
it's
in.
It's more efficient travel.
Yeah, but sometimes he'll turn into the boy for whatever reason. And then if he needs to climb a tree to get fruit, he'll turn into March. And so they actually show that, which I thought was nice.
Yeah.
That's just part of his abilities. And he doesn't often turn into Oniguma because it's very painful. I mean, he's got a bunch of arrows or spikes stuck into him.
Did they say that in the anime? I missed it. I remember them saying it in the manga that it's, he doesn't change into Oniguma because he's in constant pain if he does.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then they covered it.
Yeah. And so he just kind of continues on his travels, and then he ends up coming across the old lady that they had helped save from the bad guys
from the jail.
Yeah,
she was in the jail. She helped them escape. Sort of, they helped her escape. They all helped each other escape.
And she was in the.
Do you have her name written down? Because I wrote down a name, but I'm not sure if it's actually her name or not.
I don't have it written down, but I can tell you if it's familiar.
I wrote Piorin.
Oh yes, yeah, that
is that right?
That is okay, it. Yeah,
all right.
Because Perona was the older sister.
Perona
of
was
March.
Her son. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. Piorin.
Piorin.
I think Piorin, I think.
Oh, okay. I had Piorin, but...
Oh, Piorin, yeah. I think.
I can't remember. I sort of remember reading it more than I remember... We talked about this before, too.
Yeah.
Like, reading manga, it's a little easier to remember names because you read them, whereas in the show, you only hear them when characters say them, so...
Yeah, and it definitely gets hard to... Because I've done that with One Piece. Like, I watched so much of it, and then I started reading the manga, and it's like I get confused as to my memories. Like, which one's which?
I'm gonna look it up just to make sure.
I'm pretty sure it's Piorin.
Piorin?
We'll see. But yeah, I'll continue while you do that. So he comes across her and is just kind of ignoring her, but he walks. She still has like the stagecoach that March died in, and so Fushi goes right to, you know, that. You know, there's like still a blood stain there. It's very, you know, very sad. And then he just kind of takes off after that, and the old lady, whose name is Piorin,
Piorin.
Piorin.
Not so in the, I think in the translation and the subtitles, it was Piorin.
Yes,
but here it says Pyoran. So I'm guessing the Japanese is Pyo rather than Pio.
Oh, okay, Piorin. Piorin.
Piorin. Yeah. All right. Anyway. Piorin.
So Piorin, I mean, she's an old, elderly lady, and she's alone, having escaped. And I think initially he walks up as March, and so she's like, "Ah, what the heck?
Yeah, yeah,
you're still alive." And he just ignores her, and then
walks up as March with like arrows sticking out of her back.
Yeah, and a very sad moment where, you know, he goes as March walks to where March had died, and there's still like a blood stain there, and. But then he just starts to walk away. And I think at one point he transforms into the
Yeah, when he's standing boy. There looking at the bloodstain, he transforms into the nameless boy who I think we just call him Fushi.
Yeah.
Because we've got names for all the others.
That's true.
He doesn't
That's
have true. A name.
So, I mean, the wolf.
So he's Fushi, I guess?
Yeah.
Well, the wolf, we know the
wolf's
name.
Oh, that's right. It's...
It's really close to the name.
Joran.
Yeah, without the R.
Oh, Joran?
An A instead of the other R. So Joan.
Oh, Joan.
Yeah.
I see. Joan. Yes. So
anyway,
wolf's Joan, name is
Joan. Joan the wolf. We've got.
Yeah, that name never comes up though. But yes.
Oniguma. We've got March.
We got March and we've got Fushi.
Yeah.
That's right.
Nameless boy.
Whatever. I'll take it. Anyway. So yeah, she puts two and two together that this is Fushi and this is the monster or whatever.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, once he's looking at the bloodstain and he transforms into the boy.
And she recognizes.
She's like, oh, it's you. No wonder you're not saying anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she continues to follow him and they have a moment where he ends up climbing a tree as March to get fruit and starts throwing fruit at her.
Well, before that, she basically attacks him and tries to eat his leg.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And then he transforms into a wolf and growls at her and stuff. And she's like, come on, it'll grow back.
Yeah, that's right. She's like,
I'm a starving old lady.
Yeah, you can regenerate it. What do you care?
And then he turns into Marsh, climbs up the tree, starts eating fruit. And she's like, come on, man. And then he throws fruit at her, similar to what March did to him when they first met.
So, yeah, which is a nice callback.
Cute callback moment, yeah.
And then there's a...
And then he says, arigato. And she's like, yeah, arigato.
And then she starts to, because of that, starts to realize, I can teach you how to, more words, I can teach you how to write, and I can teach you how to say
things. Well, there's the thing with the map, where she's she's copying down the map, and he is showing a keen interest in that, and like sort of takes the paper from her and starts scribbling on it, and she's like, you want to learn how to communicate interest and stuff like that. So yeah. And then she starts teaching him and stuff.
Yeah. And then we have a montage. This is just what I was trying to get to.
Montage.
Yeah. Reading and writing. And this is what I'm curious about with the manga. Cause like this seemed to me not in a bad way, but it seemed like this was sped through a bit. Like
it's pretty quick in the manga too.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Cause it's like, before we know it, like he's like forming coherent sentences and like he's answering questions and I'm like, geez, he made a lot of progress.
Yeah, I think from the beginning of the sequence to the end of the sequence with her, you know, first writing the names in the dirt to him pointing at things and saying the names of them.
Yeah.
This is 2 pages.
Okay. But then there's like later, like shortly after that, she's like asking him questions about how he, you know, what he did before he met March, and like he's explaining he like, you know, became the wolf and like met the boy and, you know, doesn't know the boy's name. And I was just like, I mean, it was cool that we're getting to this point, but I was just like, it seems fast. I don't know. Like that
I
he would
actually super remember it from the manga on that part, but it was probably like the next page, you know?
Yeah.
So they sort of skipped along to when they're on the boat, which is the part you're talking about, I think.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So they're heading.
So they do time jump. I think the time jumps in the manga are basically the same. I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, you know, maybe 2 pages from the writing to the. I don't know. Actually, maybe it's 2 pages from the writing to being on the ship where he's talking. Because the part after that is when they get to the town and he's pointing at things in the sakana. And,
that's right. Yeah.
Kudomono and
yeah.
You know, he's pointing at the different things and saying what they are.
Yeah.
And that's probably the next page then. So
dang.
So yeah. So it speeds along pretty quick.
It didn't entirely bring me out of it, but it was just kind of just seemed a little fast to me. Like I think I would have appreciated a little more growth there of them kind of. Not only bonding, but him slowly learning. Because I feel like if it was this easy, like he would have picked up on it sooner, you know, like when March was still alive.
I mean, we don't get an idea of the time that has passed necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
So we don't know if this is like a week.
Yeah.
Or 3 months.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's true.
It could really be either.
They didn't go to the lengths to say one way or the other. So.
Right. So that's either fair. He's a really fast learner or he's just a fast learner. I would assume that this is a month's journey. I think maybe she even says at the beginning, we'll go to my lover's place. It's in, you know, where I'm from or whatever. I think she might say it's 2 months away.
Maybe. Yeah. I remember everything else you just said, but yeah, I don't remember. I mean, that could have been, but anyway, it's a minor complaint. So they get to this, they take the boat and they get to this new land and,
her homeland.
Yeah. But before they get to her lover's home.
Right.
They stay the night in the forest.
Yeah, they get there. I guess it's late in the day, so they're like, we'll sleep in the forest tonight, and then we'll go the rest of the way tomorrow or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the forest, they are attacked by a sort of malevolent spirit type thing, I guess you might call it.
Tree monster.
Yeah. Who attacks Fushi while he's sleeping as Fushi, the boy, the nameless boy.
Yeah.
And then
It's able to use its branches to sort of like seep into Fushi in whatever form he's in, and yeah. like and absorb that.
Right. And when it first happens, like they explain in the manga and in the anime as well, that like he was trying to, after that happened, he was trying to sort of regenerate into the boy, but he couldn't. And they sort of show it where he's yeah. like sort of half the boy and half spiraled or whatever. And then they talk about how, like, you know, it's basically stolen everything of the boy from him, the memories, everything. And they even show like the boy sort of blanked out in his mind. And then so he changes into the wolf and then goes and fights the tree monster, which has now taken the form of the boy.
Yeah. And I think even before that, the narrator, which is his creator...
right before that.
Sort of has like, gives him like a pep talk essentially. And like, yeah. is like, I don't think you'll understand any of this, but that's your enemy. So,
yeah. And to put it in terms that you'll understand, that is your enemy. But he explains more and says, yeah. you know, I'm your creator. And this thing was put here to interfere with you, basically, to yeah. stop you, to disrupt you.
And our goal is to protect life or protect what is. Or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So, and then all of that is clearly stuff that goes over Fushi's head, because Fushi only knows a few words, I think. Yeah,
fair.
And then he says, all right, to put it in simple terms, that is your enemy. If you value what it stole from you, you got to kill it or whatever, basically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he transforms into the wolf. He attacks it. Treath steals the wolf form from him. He transforms into Oniguma and attacks it and nearly beats it.
Yeah.
And then, it steals the Oniguma form from him. So all he's left with is March.
And the rock.
You're right.
And I was so waiting for the rock to play a role.
Yeah. Dwayne, the Rock Johnson. And also the moss, I suppose.
I guess
that,
so.
Wasn't that his first form? Yeah, it was moss on a rock, and then he transformed into the rock, and then he transformed. Anyway, yes, he could transform into a rock. That doesn't seem real useful in a fight. But anyway, and so, yeah, so then he transforms into March, and the narrator, creator guy is sort of saying things throughout this, like, you know, it has this sort of core in the middle of this tree monster. That you just have to separate that from the tree monster, and then you'll succeed. So,
like any other video game,
as the tree monster is sort of transforming into Oniguma, Fushi transforms into March, climbs up a tree, jumps into an opening that's not sealed where the core is visible, sort of grabs the core,
because he'd already kind of did some work to open it
when it was the wolf. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, grabs the core, pulls it out. Smashes the core, gets all of the forms back. The idea of that whole scene is we're sort of introduced to the concept, the idea that there are gods other than the creator who oppose what the creator is doing, what Fushi is doing,
or at least they have
existence in general.
At least there's different intentions.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting up roadblocks for some reason.
Yeah, I'm going to have to imagine that there's other deities that are similarly focused that would be allies, you know? I'm just assuming, since this is manga has been going on a while, like, it's already introduced, like, you know, a dichotomy of, you know, forces against each other. I'm imagining I'm just throwing that out there. We'll see.
Yeah. There definitely could be a lot of them. And yeah, there could be multiple sides.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. But it was cool, though. I liked that they broke that wall, so to speak. You know, the narrator became a character that we...
And he's in sort of an ethereal form. I guess we didn't explain that. Like, he couldn't help Fushi with the fight at all because he's sort of ghosty. Whatever,
and he has like a seemingly human form, but like when he's talking, it's like telepathically, like his lips aren't moving or anything.
Yeah.
It's just kind of sending a message.
I think it's sort of assumed that Pierron can't see him or anything like that. It's only Fushi is aware of his presence at all. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Fushi beats the monster, and him and Pierron go on to her lover's house, where they meet a young boy who wears a mask.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. They just show up and see the boy with the mask, and then it ends.
Yeah. I haven't read ahead, so I'm not spoiling anything.
I know. At first, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, so I read up to the point where creator appears and sort of explains that, you know, this is being stolen from you.
Okay.
I think I read up to the line, that is your enemy.
Oh, okay.
And then I stopped because I knew that I was reading ahead, but I knew that I wasn't sure where this episode was going to end.
Yeah. So you knew you're sensing you're getting close-ish.
I sort of thought like the point at which they're attacked, maybe the end, although it was teased at the end of last anime episode. So I knew that at least was in this episode. So that's where I stopped. And I haven't actually gone back and read the last part of the chapter or the volume the chapter that I was on.
It's funny that the preview helps you in that way, where you can be like, okay, I can read up to this at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it showed him being pierced by the wood spear thing or whatever, like the beginning of
the initial attack. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it showed that, and that's basically what I read up to. I just read a little bit. I read like a page past that.
Okay.
So,
cool.
I love this show. I love the manga. I love the songs.
Yeah, good music.
The opening particularly, I think.
Yeah, waiting for it to be on Spotify.
It is going to be on Spotify on June the 1st.
My God.
I did some research on it, and I signed up so that it will automatically be added to my library on June 1st. And I'm also entered into a drawing to win a Pink Blood t-shirt.
Ah.
Which, unfortunately, I have a Japanese address so that I can actually have it shipped if I do win. But I doubt very much I'll win. And they said, like, I think 200 people are going to win. So I'm guessing there's a lot more fans than that.
Probably. Hey, never know.
Of what's her name?
Utada Hikaru. Hikaru. Are you talking about the opening or the ending?
Yeah, the opening. Okay, yeah. You're right. Yeah, Utada Hikaru. So anyway, yeah, I did sign up for that. The ending, what's the name of the ending theme? Do you remember?
Mm-mm. I think I like it, but I don't remember what it is.
Is it Pale Blue?
I can only hear the opening in my head now.
Yeah. Pink blood, pink blood, pink blood.
And she's great. She's got good stuff. Oh, and they...
it's a good song.
We talked about Yakumo already, but I saw that the opening to that was on Spotify as well. Which I kind of like. I'm curious to hear the full version.
Yeah, the ending is the character voice song, I think. So
yeah. I kind of like the opening.
It'll be waiting for a while on that one, maybe. But yeah, it's not probably real high on the list of like songs to listen to outside of watching anime.
Yeah.
CV songs generally aren't, so.
Sometimes, but yeah.
I mean, other than Spider, I don't know. Love that Kimiko's theme. Anyway, did you have anything else to say between now and your eternity? I meant about to your eternity.
I just had one note. I thought it was interesting that Fushi's creator referred to him as his Earth-given name, as Fushi.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
It was in the anime, at least. And it wasn't like excessively, but it was like towards the end of whatever he was saying.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that kind of stood out to me. I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, it's a name that's been given to him. He identifies with the name. I mean, March gave it to him, so it's obviously important to him.
It's impactful, and it's stuck. So that was kind of interesting.
I mean, all he referred to him as before was it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
my little orb.
Yeah.
But yeah, other
so
than
having
that,
a name to call him by makes sense, I guess. But,
yeah.
Interesting.
Other than that, I'm at a 7 for this episode. I like it. It's good. It's definitely in my top 3. Yeah.
Yeah, this episode by itself, I don't know. It's difficult to sort of separate it from the larger. I mean, this show is an 8 out of 10 for me overall. And the manga too, I suppose. Like a combination of the two even.
Yeah. Probably hard to separate too.
And I have this episode as 8 out of 10, but I didn't really think about doing it separate from my overall rating. I think it's good. It's like a new chapter.
Yeah.
Fushi's learning. We get to see the creator. Like yeah, so much happens here that is seemingly going to be important.
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, I think I'm okay to say that this episode's an 8 out of 10 as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel quite as strongly, but again, I haven't read the manga, I like it, and it has a lot of potential, and I'm very curious to see where it goes.
I mean, last episode with March dying and everything was really impactful, I think, and that, wow, I don't even know if I don't even know how to rate that episode by itself.
Yeah.
Like, it was probably a 9, which is like incredibly high to rate an individual episode. But
on first viewing.
But it's hard to separate that from everything that came before it, because that episode by itself is not a 9. If you watch nothing else and you just watch that episode,
yeah,
you're not going to give a crap. But if you watched the first, 4 episodes and then watch that,
yeah,
it's going to break your heart a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely hits.
Yeah. So I don't know. Love this show.
It's good.
Anyway, that I guess wraps it up for us. We can't talk until your eternity. I keep trying to make this eternity joke. It's not working. I don't know what to say. You can get at us on all the socials and, send us messages and, tweets and whatever the things that you do on those social media platforms are. We can be found at Unlike Anime. That's UMLIKEANIME. We're on all the socials. UmlikeAnime.com will redirect you to our website, which is a more complicated name that I won't bother saying since I now have UmlikeAnime.com registered. Our website, you can leave comments. You can leave comments on the YouTube videos. You can, like I say, tweet at us, Facebook at us, Instagram at us, all the things. We're even on Reddit.
Patreon.
I don't post to Reddit very often, but we are on Patreon. Yeah, that is an avenue of communication as well. You can actually directly message us if you are a patron on Patreon. Having more money to produce this show and add more features, doing some video stuff possibly in the future would be great. If you can't afford it, totally understand. I can't afford it either. So I guess that does it for us. I am Tony and he is George, and we are Unlike Anime, and good night.
See you guys.